Station number 16715, John Jarvis, Rio 7.
Mr. Jarvis, Reel 7. What memories have you got of your return journey from Iraq, Mr. Jarvis?
Well, it was a boring ride, a real boring drive, you know. We used to stop on a night about an hour's distance from our destination, and all the infantry used to get out the trucks and march that 4 mile up. That was to keep you in condition. Apart from that, we used to look forward to that. When you're sitting in a truck in desperate heat, for, you know, 6 and 7 hours a day, it's terrible. It's really boring and terrible. You know, it's a real bad experience. We got down to, I once related the tale about this desert where there was a main road right through, and I asked the padre, the father, whatever he was, and I said, well, what's this represent? So, like I said, I've heard all sorts of stories, and he says it's biblical. I'm not very well versed in biblical, you know, events. So I said, why, could you explain it to us, please? And he did. He says, why, when Moses went out into the wilderness, he prayed to heaven for money. And the Lord, in all his wisdom, had sent him all these rocks down, you know. And it was some sort of a biblical story. And I thought he was pulling my leg. And the first night, you know, and but since then, I've heard it quite often, you know, and only recently I was relating it to somebody, and I begin to doubt I'd ever experience, you know. It's such a queer experience, going mile after mile, and each side of the road is these boulders, some a yard high, and some 2 foot high, and some 4 foot high, as far as the eye can see. Then the padre turns around and tells you the Lord sent them from heaven, and that's for money. Well, it's a bit hard to believe, but like, you know, and I'm not a very good believer to start with. And after that, we stopped near the Lake of Galilee. And I never went in, but some of the lads said the main part about the Lake of Galilee was it was very, very cold. I didn't go. I didn't know fancy for going, like, swimming out like that. But they said it was very cold, the water. I never experienced it, like, I never went in. So further down the line, we stopped at a place which was supposed to be near Nazareth, or the place where Jesus was born. And of course, we had a little bits of money and bits of odds and ends on us, and the place, this place, was selling Bibles, like oak back Bibles, and I believe it was equivalent to maybe £2 or £3. I can't remember the exact price, but I bought the one for my sister. My mum died when I was 10 years old, and my older sister, had brought me up, and I bought it. She was my nearest relative, and I thought myself, first chance I get, I'll write a little letter in, put it in an envelope, and post it back to England. See, we were still green as grass then, we didn't know, you know. Anyway, I bought this Bible and put it in my kid bag, and I forgot all about it. I'll relate to you a story about that after, but at present it's irrelevant. Anyway, we did all them places, coming through Transjordan, we got a bit of different scenery, you know. And coming through Haifa, Palestine, it's a different country, although it's still very hot. There's a little bit of vegetation. And I remember there going to, in Palestine, going to a place, I believe they call them kibbutz. Kibbutz is a kibbutz or something. It's a type of communist idea for the working class people to farm and grow their own produce. And it was a marvellous experience. I still remember that as it was yesterday.
They were in existence then, were they?
They were in existence, yes. And these people, these Jew people, they carved a Garden of Eden out the wilderness, and they transported by pipes and irrigation little ditches from the mountains water, and they bought for it and one thing and another, and they had the water there, and they grew everything that you could desire. And they had a communal dining room, a communal, you know, everything was communal, And even on a weekend, if it was your turn, you got the communal car. And maybe you had to wait another 10 days or 20 days before you got it again to go into town maybe it's you know, but it was, to me, like, it was a good, everybody seemed to be pulling the weight. They were so conscientious, you know, they looked after it. Now, later on, I suppose that they fight for it, but at that particular time, they were creating a Garden of Eden in the bleeding desert place, you know, which the Palestinians and nobody seemed to want. They wanted it because they wanted Rome. Simple as that. And they made a hell of a job of it. I thought, yeah, I visited one of them. It was a great experience, I thought. Then we bucked down after that, and we come right down through Palestine, over the Suez, you know, I think we went through Cairo, or a big city, in the middle of the night, you know, for reasons, you know, but known to the military people. And the next thing I knew, we were on our way to the, just outside of Tobruk, in this Gazala box.
Were you travelling in your lorry?
Aye, convoy, yeah.
Some of the infantry went by train at a certain part.
Well, this could be so. Huh?
But you were in lorries?
We come down from Iraq, driving day after day, you know, in lorries. But I know, I can't remember much after Cairo, and the next thing I knew, we were in the desert in the Gazala box. It was surrounded by mines, you know, for some parts of how deep they were, I don't know, but there was a hell of a lot of mines, you know.
What was the desert like? What did it look like?
They should fight all wars in the desert. There's no civilians. The few civilians that are there, they're not worth bothering about, you know. But that's why they should fight all wars, you know, because there's no civilian population, no children, you know. There's just man against man, machine against machine. And we were boxed in the Gazala box, you know.
What were the conditions like? How were you living?
Well, we even had nappy once a week, you know. We got a bar of chocolate and a tin of beer and cigarettes, you know. A certain type of cigarettes, you know what I mean. It's quite hard. We obviously, you know, I never ate chocolate very much, and we obviously swapped the chocolate to a teetotal sort of person, and he used to give us his can of beer, and I'd give him my bar of chocolate, and we'd maybe finish up with three or four cans of beer, which was more to my liking, you know. You could sit down and an eight and have a bit sing song and drink the beer, and that was your for the week. Your ration gone for the week. Oh, it was, the sun seemed to get everywhere, you know. And the worst part, the hard part about it was night time. It's pitch black on the night. Very, very black. And when we first went up there, as I told you before, we were green. You know, really, really green. Green as grass. And I have known officers take their compass with them to go to the toilet, you know. And that sounds silly, but it's right. If you could get lost going from A to B, which was maybe 50 yards, and you were in a minefield, you know. So you couldn't wander about. So the advice, yeah, if you did get lost, was sit down, cover your head up with your top coat or whatever it was, and sit there and remain in the night. And you'll believe me, it was really cold. On the night time, on the daytime, it was boiling like the oven, and on the night time, it was cold. We used to put our great coats on to go to the toilet with, you know.
What was the toilet? How was that?
It was petrol tins, you know, then it was very necessary the trench had set fire to them, one thing and another. Different types, you know, and some of them just had like a bag curtain around, you know, like made bags. And it was, I thought it was, you know, it was pretty hygienic, like, it was almost like, I suppose when you're under bombardment, you know, at the time, we never seemed to suffer a great deal by bombardments. We went out on force duties, and then we had some jock columns went out, you know, and this and that and to there.
What would be a post duty? What would be a post duty? Which post did you go to? Or what was a post?
You used to go through the minefields, and really speaking, it was artillery post, I believe. I'll tell you all I know about anyone. It was a post in front of the main minefields. And I know I was there with a section, and there was the Cheshire's, that's heavy machine guns, like the Northumberland Fusiliers type of people, heavy machine guns. And then there was an artillery officer who had control of the radio and all the maps in front of them and dug in a dugout, you know. We went underneath, you know. That's why they call us the Desert Rats. Because everywhere we went, we dug in, see. If you just stop for your dinner, you used to dug in. Any road, the first night I was ever out on one, and it was a terrible experience to me. I was green, as I told you, and I was frightened. Because just in front of us, all of a sudden, there was all this noise, you know, and I didn't understand the Italian then. Odd words, you know. And Mario, and shouting about they were. And I said to this artillery officer, I said, how far are they away? Sir, he says, maybe 400 yards, something like that, 500. He says, don't worry, they'll be there in the morning, sort of style, you know. I says, wait the pace to me, I can hear them digging in. And I says, I can hear them talking to each other. I says, what do you think is going to happen? Are they going to attack the house? You know, want to know everything. And he says, the Germans will have shoved them forward out of the road, you know. What they were doing was digging in right, like half circling in front of the post. And there must have been a battalion, you know, roughly speaking, there must have been 1,000 or 800 or 900 men, some of them in that region. But we knew the Italians by the voices, you know. The Germans never shouted at each other. The Italians, you see, I suppose they were afraid of the dark, I don't know. There's not very many brave men in wartime, in my opinion. And they were digging in and shouting at each other. Any road when morning came, I never went to sleep. I sat with my lads nearly all night, you know. I was thinking they were going to come and die, you know. The man come and he was as cold as cucumber. Whether he was an experienced man or not, he must have been. He directed some fire on, all of a sudden there was all sorts of fire about it. He just did. I don't think there was many left. I can't remember taking any prisoners. All I can remember was days after, you know, there was a terrible smell and this and that and the other, and it's part of war, you know, isn't it? The smells and the... Some of the lads wanted to go out to get souvenirs, you know, and we stopped them, sort of style. We thought it wasn't.
Was the post in its position? Was it wired in and mined?
Yes. Aye, had to be, you know. Yeah.
And how many men would be in position?
But that wouldn't have stopped that. When I reflect on the position, that wouldn't have stopped the tanks coming up and artillery bombarding us, you know, and blowing us to British Midrange, because there's only, you know, there wasn't a big force. Maybe 30, 40 men, you know, and it was more or less an artillery outpost, artillery observation post, that's what they call them, aren't they? Yeah, and we must have been there as the Durham Light Infantry as a protection, you know, in case of ground attack.
And was this a platoon or a section that was there?
I couldn't answer to be quite right. If I could remember, there'd be 20 or 30 of us there, somewhere in that region, yeah. Yeah.
They gave the posts names, do you recall them?
Oh, yes. Yes, you're quite right. No, that's one thing I had forgot. Yes, they had names, but I couldn't tell you what they called them. Yes, each post had a different name. Yes, that's right. And each post had a different road through the minefields. You know, to talk to ordinary laymen about minefields, one's got to see them before it can... the immense size of the bleeding things. Now, something I didn't know very little about because I wasn't there, but at El Alamein, when the Germans advanced and they stopped them at El Alamein, ready for the counterattack, the Germans laid minefields 5 miles deep. Now, can you imagine my space for me to spend any more, you know? And that gives you an idea. Now, the only way out of them was bits of white tape that, you know, that the signals, whatever these people had laid down for you to get in and out. And it wasn't a very nice thing. Although I only, in my time, I think I saw one action. In my time, you know.
And that was a Gazala?
Yeah. Yeah, that was when we were breaking out. I think the first time. I think it was the first time we were coming out. And we come out more or less as a battalion.
Well, we can come to that because it's part of the story.
Yeah.
Can we just concentrate on getting a picture of the Ghazala box? You say there was an extensive minefield. How wide would the minefield be?
Oh, I know that I couldn't. I couldn't be sure. It'd be approximately, if I told you it was a mile, where I might have been a mile out, you know. It was very big. To me, then, them days, it was immense, you know. It was immense. Well, it was impregnable, in my opinion. But in them days, for that type of warfare, you know.
You had your minefield. Was the wire obstructions there as well? Were you wired in?
Well, the minefields was mal. No, we had tapes, white tapes we used to use, bits of roadways in and out.
You didn't have wire entanglements around your position?
Well, I suppose there could have been, but I never. I mean, you'd want a hell of a little way to come for 2 or 3 miles and go right round, because they went right round us, you know. They went right round us, right. And as I said before, they're pretty much, in my opinion, impregnable for that type of warfare, you know, for ground warfare. We could see in our box, and there you see maybe it's direct or shell it over, you know, and the half horse would come and have a bit practice with us, the Italian half horse. They used to like to come in odd times, I'd be about times. As the story goes, our left-hand colonel was then a man called Battiscombe. Left-hand colonel Battiscombe.
What was he like?
Well, he was a. He didn't associate with the men, you know. He was an old regular soldier, you know. And I suppose it's the way he'd been brought up, and you know the fact that he'd been a regular soldier and gone through all these academies and one thing and another, and he was a stiff, you know, regimentalist. He was a lot of people say he was a good colonel, you know. He's a proper old-fashioned colonel. It's generally these that come up from the bottom sort of style and work their way up. But he'd work his way up like in more or less in civilian life, you know. Maybe he'd been in India or something like that, I don't know. He was a regular, I believe, wasn't young, you know, and got the best experience, I'd say.
Did you see much of him?
I saw him once, I believe maybe once I was there, I believe it was an Italian airplane they were after. It was practicing swoops and firing at the lads. And he rode they must eat it. And I believe he was there. Because the story goes, I don't know if it's true, but the story goes that he was saying to the lads, you know, go and shoot the bastards down, sort of style. And he rode they'd gone and shut them down, and I believe they must have killed the pilot or something. You know, to make sure we're sort of style, they'd killed the pilot. And he'd bailed out, and he'd rode by the time the lads picked him up, he was more or less dead, you know. And that was the only time I ever had any experience with aircraft. It was Italian, you know.
You were still with support company, were you?
Headquarters.
Headquarters company.
Yes, yes, yes.
Your living conditions, how were you?
Well, I think I told you the last time, the British Army never improved. They didn't seem to learn off Dunkirk, you know. But for reasons outside of Tobruk and them places, they call us the desert rats, simply because we dug in. And we dug in and put camouflage over our pit, and that was our living quarters. We lived with a gun, you know, with a mortar, our rifles and Ben guns, we lived with them. That was our barracks, see. And over the top we'd put like a tarpaulin with the camouflage on, you know, why sand's easy camouflage, you just want something brown and with sand on top, you know. And we're all underground, all, you know, only time... I believe we once lost a lad going to the toilet. He had to get out the trench and go across open land. And I think he was unlucky. He catched a bit of a barrage artillery, maybe, I don't know. But And he rode the march from them long artillery guns, you know, they fired a terrible long way. And he rode, he got it. I don't know whether he died or whether he was taken back to hospital or what, I don't know, but he been crossing open ground to go to the toilet, which was on top of the ground, you know, less. But that's why we leave that in the slit trenches, you know.
How did you camouflage your vehicles?
Oh, we dug them in. Pretty important part in the desert, your vehicles. The only trouble is they want water, you know. And water was all, it was a scarcity, it was, you know, it was cold. It terrific, oh, they kept us going with water. I think we only used to get about a pint a day. Of course, when you were using your vans or your wagons, they're going priority, like sort of style, you know.
How did you cope with such a small amount of water? As you would be washing to keep yourself clean and drinking.
I got it, didn't wash so much. You could, there was like two types of water. There was water for drinking, and sometimes you've got a bit of salty water, like, you know, it wasn't really good water for drinking, but you could wash your face in. Otherwise, you, on a man, if you felt like it, put a little drop of water in a helmet, you know, and each man put a little, and you all shaved. And I'm afraid that was our washing all the times, you know. But you really didn't get dirty because the sun. You say your worst enemy in that type of climate is typhus, is lice, you know. Why, I found that out later, like, you know. But we were pretty clean. In fact, we all seemed to have abundance of petrol. And I've known as wash our clothes in petrol, you know. Whether that was a good point or a bad point, I don't know. But we used to sweat quite a while, a bit, you know. Although at times we didn't wear clothes, plenty clothes to get anything with, because we should just have a little pair of shorts on and a pair of sand shoes, and that was it. We were brown as berries, we were healthy, and we were clean, you see. The way to breed lice is when you're cold and plenty clothes on and you're undernourished, you know, that's when lice gets on top of you and get typhus. In my opinion, like prison camp life, you know, I'll tell you about that after if you want to know about it. And we were pretty clean, but that's how we used to shave. But majority of us, we used to keep our water for the cold of the evening when it was more beneficial. Now I'd put maybe half of mine for a drink of tea, which as you know, a drink of tea is better for your thirst than what water is. I mean, if you used up the water, it was a warm for the day, it did you no good because you run about. And you looked after it just like gold. Just like gold it was water. Aye. And I've suffered both thirst and starvation, as I'll later tell you. But, by God, thirst. When we were took prisoners of war, it was the thing that stood out in my mind for ages after ages and ages and ages.
We'll come to that later.
Yeah.
Did you have part of your water ration to hand over to the cooks?
No. See, sometimes I had no cooks. You just had a Dixie lid and you put your own bit of corned beef in, or, you know. Or sometimes you couldn't be bothered, you just used to slice it up and I'd take biscuits.
I see. I thought part of the ration of each man went to the company cooks.
When they put my ration in my water bottle, Joe Lewis couldn't get it. He couldn't mind the cooks. He couldn't. I know, unless they took it out before we got it, you mean? That's maybe that way. Maybe it's a bulk water ration before we got our. We used to survive on just turn the pint a day water.
Was it tasty water? Nice
water? Well, no, they used to treat it. You used to treat it with it. We used to get them tablets. It is chlorine or something. Tablets, they call them. I forget the name. Everybody had tablets. I was reading and watching on television not long ago, you know, about these people in the desert when they come to these wells, and they blame the British for poisoning the well. And then another well we went to, and we blamed the Germans for poisoning the well. And when they all come to Hull, neither of them was poisoning the wells. It was natural occurrence. It was oil. As you know, big oil fields now in Tripoli, Algiers, and them places, they're all blown oil. Nobody ever thought about it then, because that's what it was. It was oil shaped from through the ground. Now, I didn't know this till after. And they used to blame us for contaminating the water. And of course, we blame them for doing the same thing. The natural occurrence.
So you didn't suffer from any lice?
In
Gazala? The box itself?
No.
What kind of health problems did you have?
Well, really speaking, we were pretty fit, you know. A lot of people, I know later on, I could have given you a good version. Our hardtack and our corned beef, which was our staple diet, you know, it was 10 times better than anybody thought it was. It was a real godsend to me. It was later on, I tasted Italian and I tasted German, and they weren't in the same class, you know. You couldn't even put them in the same street. You know, and really speaking, we practically lived on corned beef. There's more tins of corned beef floating about than there's corned beef. Sometimes you just go down the park in and eat with your biscuits. But you say, we were young, 20, 21 year old. We were fit as lops, you know. We were 12 and a half and 13 stone and muscle sort of style. And brought up in a rough area, they didn't worry us very much. You know, if we got a chance of a bit chop and bits of odds and ends, we'd take them, you know what I mean? But really speaking, we didn't, when you reflect back before the war, in 1930, around this area, it was a real derelict area, you know? And it was not only all people to go to school with boots and no stockings on. And the boots are getting off gifted off somebody else, you know, so... To get 3 meals a day in the army, it was really an improvement. Although it's rather very queer thing to say, but it was we were pretty fit. I thought we were anyway.
And from time to time, you said you got
a nappy lunch. Yeah.
A nappy.
Oh yes. Yeah, we got bits of chocolates and bits of beer and maybe bits of chewing gum, things like that. Yeah. Mind you, rushing with beer, couldn't go and get yourself 5 or 6 pints. You got maybe a can or 2 cans, you know. Yes, we've had the nappy. I don't know how often it came and I think, but I can remember it coming. Because I can remember sitting inside the dugout, you know, and one corner they were eating the chocolate, the other one they were smoking their duck, and we were sitting in the corner with 3 or 4 cans of beer apiece, you know. Aye, it worked out all right. No, we were all right. I suppose if you were there, a long, long, long time, it would tell him the shortage of grains and things like that. But say, when you go into a position like that and you're as fit as what we were, and as healthy as what we were, and mind you, we were fit and healthier then, we haven't been our lives. To go into a predicament like that, you know, it would be a cake, you know. We could have gone 6 months and that have been no worse off at the start. It might have started to tell if we were there 18 months or 2 years, just doing nothing but eat corned beef. But I suppose we got bits of hydrated potatoes and hydrated vegetables and things like that every now and again. And we're all as pretty, we're all as. I mean, even in England, when we're 3 good meals a day, we're still hungry because we're mobile, you know. We used to do a lot of exercise and God, when we were in England, we'd do 7 days at 28 miles a day, just with a bit of food set of stars.
Were the officers getting better food than you were?
There wasn't, between men and officers, there wasn't a great rapport, what do you call that word, rapport. The sort of elder cells to be in a different class to what we were. You know, it was the old-fashioned, I'm sorry to say this, but it was the old-fashioned way, you know, hitting you, nobody, you know. We didn't get enlightened the way we should be. Mind, later on they did. I understand by watching and reading historical bits of things about Montgomery and these people. They believed in keeping the, and to be quite honest, I believed in the now. To me, it's essential. The people's told the position and everything like that, you know. We weren't.
But at this time,
me myself personally, I had a local officer, half a mile up the road here. Well, he was a lieutenant, and he finished up a major or something, Major Kirby. He just died there 2 or 3 years back, poor lad. And I got on personally. I got on with him. You know, at times had a couple of words with him, you know. And I once asked him if it would be possible to get the lads a few cans of beer extra, you know, or something special. And he said, I'll tie my neck out. You know, he's one of them sort. But really speaking, they never associated with. They didn't come along and get you in the group and say, right, lads, sit down and we'll talk things over. And, you know, you were left, maybe the sergeant or the corporal might do that, you know, but the officers.
How did you cope with the flies?
Oh, they were a problem. Oh, yes. Oh, they were a problem. Oh, what to do with them, I don't know. There's millions of blatant things.
Did they make life difficult for
you? Oh, yes, they were, especially where there was any food, you know. Oh, yes. Yes, they reckon they breed like rabbits, maybe 10 times worse than rabbits, but there was a tournament among that, especially where food was. But, touch wood, we never suffered no ill effects from, you know, the disease you get off flies. I don't know what it is, but I know you get malaria from mosquitoes. And I tell you, the only time that I ever suffered anything was when we first landed down, I had enteritis.
This was at Gazala, was it?
No, when I first landed. I was in hospital in the base depot, you know, and after that, I never saw and heard of nobody getting malaria or any